road to restructuring.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. General Motors is running on four flat tires and a check engine light, but it is still running. And the Obama administration is insisting on a full-on repair job. Published reports say the U.S. Treasury wants GM to get its paperwork in order in the coming weeks for a possible bankruptcy filing. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch joins us right now. So, Dan, here we are with yet another timetable.
Yeah, that's right. GM has been given until June 1st, according to the New York Times, to come up with a bankruptcy plan. Basically, they're looking at a surgical bankruptcy. You would take the good assets from GM and you would spin those off into a new company. And with the help of $5 to $7 billion in federal financing, the new company could be back in business in a matter of weeks. And the reason why the feds are insisting that GM do this now is because it is a huge amount of paperwork and preparation to file for Chapter 11.
Yeah, but Dan, isn't GM still working on a restructuring proposal for the administration?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is kind of a parallel process to that other plan. Basically, the feds want GM to have a bankruptcy plan in place in case the restructuring plan isn't acceptable.
So what is then GM hoping for out of all of this?
Well, GM is a new CEO. His name's Fritz Henderson, and he insists that he can find a way for GM to survive without filing for Chapter 11. He basically needs to strike deals with bondholders and with the auto workers union. Those are the two groups that have held up GM's restructuring so far. The real question, I guess, is whether or not people are going to still want to buy GM's cars when all this stuff is up in the air.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Steve.
Wall Street keeping an eye on GM and looking closely at financial institutions this week. Earnings reports are expected from J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs in the coming days. Wells Fargo last week said it expects record profits for the first quarter. Markets shot up with that news, and that was all part of yet another week of gains, five in a row. See how this week does. Dow ended the week last week at 8083. It's up 23% since its lows in March, but still down for the year. No trading in Europe today as part of the holiday weekend there, and some Asian markets are still closed as well. The Nikkei shed about 0.5%. The Chinese benchmark added nearly 3%. China is promising an infusion of $25 billion for its Asian neighbors. It is yet another high-profile deal that follows up on its high-profile G20 summit performance earlier this month. Our China Bureau Chief Scott Tong is with us now from Shanghai. Scott, much of this money is for infrastructure in the so-called ASEAN countries, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Why are they doing this?
Well, China wants to help them do it for its own reasons. First of all, China's not been blessed by Mother Nature as far as raw materials, so it needs to get them somewhere, by ship or by rail or by canal, and this will help them get those. It also helps, after China makes all these products to export to the world, it helps them get products to markets in Southeast Asia. And for the countries that are receiving this, obviously they want better ports and railroads in general, so arguably it's a win-win situation.
So, Scott, the devil's advocate in me, though, says this sounds a whole lot like China buying influence. Is that what's going on here?
There's a big debate about this, and I think it just depends on how you see China. If you see China as a more responsible stakeholder in the world, that this is just a natural manifestation of its economic clout, you'll see it that way. This is just kind of natural. In fact, a lot of opinion polls in Southeast Asia find China's reputation is getting better, and it's better than Washington's reputation. If you think there's something darker, you start uttering words like Monroe Doctrine and sphere of influence, that China is rewriting the rules of foreign aid and kind of nudging aside these old institutions like the World Bank.
So what can go wrong with all of this then?
Well, Steve, Americans know how it can go wrong. If you think about Halliburton, you think about Katrina, we always wonder how companies get these giant deals. On this side of the world, China has a big deal with Pakistan to sell trains for Pakistan Rail. Now, late last week, a scandal started brewing there that the Chinese company involved, which actually beat an American competitor, General Electric, in the process, it got the deal, according to Pakistani officials, through fake paperwork.
So how did they defend themselves then against those charges?
Well, the Chinese companies in the middle of these controversies tend not to say much. But academics in China who watch these things, they say, hey, you know what? China is new at this. And if it's making these mistakes, it's because it's never had to deal with these international transparent rules before. And the optimist would say, well, these Chinese companies are going to learn their lesson. They're going to get burned. And in the future, it'll get better.
Marketplace's Scott Tong joining us from Shanghai. Scott, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice, over 10,000 independent insurance agencies across America committed to treating customers as people, not policies. Online at trustedchoice.com. By Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members navigate troubled economic times. Thriven.com/new offers.
The National Indian Gaming Association kicks off its conference today. What's on the agenda? How to woo people back into gaming houses in the midst of an economic fallout. Some tribes are cutting frills or even diversifying. Here's Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll.
When money's tight, who's gambling? Doug Elmitz is a spokesman for California Indian Casinos. He says a lot of folks, actually.
The reality of the situation is that most gaming casinos are still making an awful lot of money.
True, the $26 billion industry isn't living as high and wild as it once was, but the same number of people are walking through casino doors. They're just betting less. So to cope, Indian casinos are slimming down. Gone are the spas, hotels, and golf courses added when times were flush. Steve Light is co-director of the University of North Dakota's Tribal Gaming Institute. He says tribes are spreading around their investments.
What a number of tribes have done in terms of industry, it ranges from things like making the Kevlar vests that our troops use in Iraq and Afghanistan to actually chocolatiers.
He says that doesn't mean Indian gaming is gone. Far from it. Tribes are just hedging their bets. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.